Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for watching the podcast. If you do so on YouTube or wherever you watch it, please hit that button to subscribe and see my comedies and other things of that nature. That makes me happy. Thank you for being patient about the podcast. Sorry that I wasn't here last week for Halloween and that this episode is a day late, but that's what happens sometimes in life. Changes get thrown your way. Things pop up in your life and you just gotta roll with the punches or roll with the punches, which is a show I would have had on NBC if this was 1996. So what a world that would have been. You know the drill. Come see me do comedy. This Saturday, I'll be in St. Louis, Missouri at the Flyover Comedy Festival. I will be in Chicago, Illinois the next weekend, Thursday and Friday only at the Rosemont Zany. So please go see me there. That's the last two shows of the year. So that's the last two places you can see me for 2022. Other than that, you can still see me on in your screen, in your house, on your phones, wherever you like. You can go watch Loop, Apple TV Plus with me, Maya Rudolph, other wonderful, amazing people. You could watch Harley Quinn on HBO Max. That would be great. You could watch Jellystone on HBO Max. That's fun. Is there anything else that I'm in? I always forget. Oh, The Great North that I'm in on Fox. Check that out. And then other than that, go watch Blair Saki's in the Aqua Teen movie. We love her. So go check that out. That seems like a good idea. And see anything else. I'll get to the shout outs in the very intro proper. Twitch.tv, Ron_Funches. If you want to hang out and watch me play video games or play games with me, about to get into that God of War Ragnarok and whatnot. So come on by if you want to do that. And then happy holidays. I love you. Let's get to the show. Hi. Thank you for making it through. Appreciate you being here. Love you. Those people who support us on things like Patreon, I appreciate that. You can go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithRon. I think that's it. If not, just Google it, figure it out. And you can be a Patreon supporter just like Jalen and Leland. Two wonderful people who are out there doing their best, trying their hardest. Sometimes people try to put obstacles in their way, but guess what? They're problem solvers and they overcome and they destroy those obstacles and then look back and laugh and remember those as the good times. Because that's how life works. I hope you're feeling strong. I hope you're feeling brave. I hope you're feeling loved. You're grateful for that love in whatever form it takes. I think so often we get caught up in wanting love or wanting our life to be the way that we envision it, the way that we want it, or the way that like our culture wants it to be, right? I talk to so many people who are, you know, getting older. As I approach 40 myself, we're like, oh, I want a kid. I want a family. I want that picket fence. And sometimes that's not what makes happiness, and that's not what makes you feel life should be custom fitted. And if what that doesn't make you feel good, or if that's not in your life's plans for you, you shouldn't hold yourself to those standards or make yourself feel bad because you don't have those things. Because you probably have things in your life that those people wish they had, probably like sleep, expendable income, things of that nature. You know, that if those people with families don't have the ability to watch whatever the fuck they want, whenever they want. There's a lot of good things on both sides of the fence, and family and life and love takes so many forms. And I think one of the best things you can do in your life with any relationship is just try to make sure you keep that love no matter what form you have. You know, I think in a lot of ways, it's you can look at it a lot with parenting, you know. The relationship that you have with your mom and your dad might be good, it might be bad, but it changes as you become an adult and have your own self-power and become self-reliant. And hopefully, if you got a good relationship, that relationship that used to be them looking over you becomes more of this friendship and this mentorship that they still provide you with about being an adult and how to handle things as you get older and handle life mistakes and making things that seem like such a big deal to you because you never been through them before. You know, showing them that they're commonplace, showing them that they're part of your everyday life, whatever loss it is, whether it's you lose a loved one, you know, like I lost my grandma recently and that's been a struggle, or you're just whatever it is. It's just hard to sometimes go through life, and if you have someone there that has been through the same struggles you've been through, it makes it just a little bit easier and easier to deal with. Also, while we're just here, I guess I should just remind you to vote. Get your vote on. Get that vote going on, because you know people be trying to trick us and give things in our best interest. And then the fact that we, you know, we need to make sure that they go, hey, you can still get abortions here, you know, because it's a scary world out there. And I think you gotta protect what we thought was just given rights that we just have. But things are... We make so much progress, and I know I keep speaking in half sentences, but it's just because I got a lot of different emotions going on in me right now, because there's so much going on in the world. I've been overwhelmed by things, been sick, been having issues just at home, and been having issues at work a little bit, and just trying to get myself together and ready for the next season of my show and stuff. And so, just got a lot of different emotions and stuff going on, and I just feel like you gotta sometimes remind yourself and remind people of where you stand, especially as it appears that more and more people keep finding out about me and learning about me, which I think is a beautiful thing and wonderful thing. But then I see online, which is always a horrible place, where people say some stuff about you and then other people start going, oh, I didn't know that about that person. And then everybody starts taking it as fact. So it's just a good time since we are getting ready to vote and stuff. And I will never tell you how to vote, but I'm going to tell you what I believe in and what's important to me. And I hope that it matches up with you. If not, it's okay to disagree as long as we're sweet and civil to each other, and as long as you're not racist or homophobic or sexist or don't believe in conspiracy theories. If you remember that joke, that's fun. Speaking of which, I posted that joke. That kind of leads back into everything. One of people's jokes that people like about me, my conspiracy theory joke. And I always think it's fun because when I wrote it, I never like to explain a joke because I don't think you should explain art, but it was just a joke about different conspiracies. I even go through the actual conspiracies that I'm talking about in the bit, if you watch the full bit. But since it came out years ago, any type of, like, you know, whether it's a super leftist conspiracy or super right wing conspiracy, sometimes those type of people post the bit to go like, ooh, look, this is what smart people think, that the government is lying to you. And they cut out me talking about how you shouldn't be homophobic and racist, which is always interesting. But I saw a comment recently where somebody posted the joke again and it gets a bunch of likes or whatever, I love it when it gets posted and it goes viral or whatever, and it makes me be like, oh, look at me writing jokes that people really fuck with or get mad about, and I like that. And then someone was like, this is a horrible joke and you spreading misinformation about vaccines. And I was like, I wrote that joke before the pandemic was even a twinkle in I was about to say a joke that would not allow me to be played in certain places, so I didn't say it. Oh, but before it was even created or co-opted or put around. I wrote that joke, and then they were people were like, "You gotta calm down." I was like, "Well, Ron's, you don't know Ron's a closet anti-vaxxer. He talked about how vaccines made his son have autism and stuff like that." And I have gone on podcasts and talked about that. The first time that I noticed traits of my son having autism was after regular shots for his for different vaccinations, the exact same thing, but it wasn't for COVID, different vaccinations. And I just always said that as an anecdotal thing that was a part of my life, but apparently now that meant that I was a closet anti-vaxxer and all that, you know. And I'm like, I got three fucking boosters in my, I'm fully Moderna all the way through. I don't even mix and match. I'm a pure blood when it comes to. Got more than four doses of Moderna through me, baby. Don't fucking fuck with me. And so I was just like, you know what? I always hate that. I always feel like you could listen to me, you could talk to me, you can feel my energy, you could just assume what I'm about. But you know, we live in weird times. So just in case anybody ever tries to tell you something about me, you could, or and you know me, or if someone brings something up, let's just refer them back to this thing where I just look you directly in the eye and tell you what I love and what I'm about. I am a big believer in positive energy, optimism. I'm a big believer that your mind is a very powerful tool that can create the reality that you live in. And that you believe that your life is shitty, it will be so. That if you believe your life is beautiful, the universe will meet you halfway to make it so. I'm not saying that you don't have to put in work to do so, but I'm just saying that I believe that you, the life is what you make it. I'm a big believer in women's rights in whatever form it may be. If you want to get abortions, get as many as you want. They should be free to me. I think we should be doing it like in Japan, where women get on bus in the first in the morning and last at night, and just be safe. That the natural way of the world is feminine led, where men are the muscle, and of course, people might turn that against me right away, but I'm just going to talk how I talk. The men are there to support and be strength and to provide and provide peace of mind for their women, not to dominate, not to attack, not to be pillagers or rapers of, but to provide safety. And when you provide safety and positive energy and kindness for women, they tend to just open up naturally to you, if you get what I'm saying. I'm a big believer, of course, in just rights of all people, black people, Jewish people, because it feels like right now, if you black, sometimes people think that you might hate Jewish people because of Kanye, Kyrie Irving. And a lot of people don't know about this or will say stuff about this, but I'm going to tell you just a little bit I know about this. It's just a small sect of black people who are, you know, black Israelites who consider the black people to be the actual Jews. And they think, and that's when, like, Kyrie, he probably won't ever say this, allegedly to me, with Kyrie, because I don't want to get sued, when Kyrie says stuff like I can't be anti-Semitic because I know who I am, it's that dog whistle of people talking about being a black Israelite, that the black people are the true Jews, the true Hebrews, and that these the Jewish people that we know are falsified and, you know, in the evil and stuff. And I don't believe in any of that shit. I think I'm a big believer in the Black Jewish Coalition, both in music, with people like the Beastie Boys and and that guy Dave from the show Dave, and in comedy as well. You know, it's just a strong black Jewish coalition. There always has been strong, like shows like Seinfeld. It's just like a Zen diagram, and it should be of people. But there's this thing lately of people comparing their plights instead of letting bonding over shared trauma. And that's how I always known it to be. It's also, again, big, usually big fan of Jewish women, very lovely, wonderful, and open to things. And So I stand with the Jewish community, with the Black community, with women, with oppressed groups. Usually, anytime if you oppress Palestine, Ukraine, you know, if you with the rebels, I'm with the rebels. I'm not with the empire, and that's just who I am as a person. And I tend to just rock that way. Oh, also pro trans, fuck the TERFs, and. pro sex worker, pro weed, pro all that shit. I just believe in a fucking positive world of being yourself and taking care of your energy and taking care of your life and custom fitting your life and not being held to one standard of just being like, I need to have two kids, a wife, and a picket fence. And that's what makes a life in a 401k. And that's what makes a life good. What makes a life good to me is good people around you, good friendships, good energy, getting able to travel, being able to learn, and just being able to be yourself. To have the space, to have the people around you that accept you for you, who don't make you change who you are, who don't force you into a box, who don't make you put on airs, who aren't embarrassed of you, who see your value. And that's what life's all about to me, surrounding the people who see value, run towards those people. And that's what I try to do with my comedy, with my life, with anything I do. I don't try to change up for, you know, best or worst. I fuck with who I fuck with. I love my life, and I'm going to go as far as I do in my career off of me. And I kind of like that. I'm never going to be like, oh, he made it because he was somebody's boy or because he's networking with this person. People either fuck with me because they know my reputation and they know what I'm about and they know I love to bring positive energy and I'm open to notes, but I come with an idea. That's who I am. And let's get ready for this next year. It's a good time to start thinking about vision boards, thinking about goals, thinking about what we did accomplish this year, what we could have done better at. And as we march, and for me personally, again, marching closer and closer to that 40th birthday, and I'm using it as a marker for me. So I remember when I was married, my first marriage, when I was like 20 years old, and I remember going to my father-in-law's birthday party, and he's turning like 40. I think he's turning 42. I was 21. So I was like, this man is twice as old as me. And I just remember he had that picket fence. He had the little water feature in his front yard. And I knew also that his wife was not treating him well. He knew also that he wasn't happy that he was that his kids weren't doing well. And calling, I can say it because she knows that she's a fan of me now, but even though she hated me back then because she was on methamphetamines and stuff. I won't say your name. You calling him bomb threats and doing all a bunch of shit like that. And my man had to live with that his kid was off the rails doing drugs, calling in bomb threats to school, but he wanted to portray that life of having everything, of having that picket fence, having the two kids and stuff. And then he eventually freaked out and he had to leave and find his happiness elsewhere. And I remember, I like, man, I don't want to be that age in that position. And I'm lucky that I don't feel that way. I love my life. I love the people that are around me. I love what I'm doing. And I'm trying to be in the best health, best shape, best mental space, and just loving what I do. I'm loving the shows that I'm on. I can watch a show that I'm in now and be like, God damn, I'd watch this even if I wasn't in it. I like this shit. I'm excited about where life could go, and I'm up to any challenge. I'm excited to pay the cost, to be the boss, hopefully make my own production company. Who knows? Kind of rambling now, a little bit stoned. But also, you can see I've been really focusing on the health. If you're watching the video version, you can watch the ebbs and flows. And right now, I'm glowing, and my face is looking nice and chiseled with different definitions. And we're going to keep it going. So stay with me through the holidays. It's going to be difficult. We got Thanksgiving. We got Christmas. We got parties. We got drama. We got family. We got gloom and doom and rain and snow. It's going to be rough this time, but we're going to stick through it together, right? And we're going to make it through together because there's always another day and there's next year. And there's always time right now to start today and have a better life. If you want to get your vision board mind together, well, you know we're going to do a vision board party online. So go get your crayons. Go get your construction paper. Go get your magazines. Go get your pictures of your sports cars, your house that you want, of the life that you want to live, of the tranquility that you want to bring into your life. And let's focus. And go get that shit because it's on us. Nobody else gonna bring it to us because they out there focusing on they shit. Fucker, I mean, that's half the shit right now with this voting stuff, right? Vote for the people who got your best interests at heart. But also remember, nobody gonna take care of you out here. So get out there and fucking get it how you want it. Live your life how you want to live it. Appreciate you guys. Enjoy this episode. I don't even know if we decided who the guest was going to be on this best of episode. So maybe we really flying by the seat of our pants. Let me just pick a name and then we'll do that one. Let's go with a classic episode who I just love so I can promote the show, which I also love. The Righteous Gemstones. You gotta love it. You gotta watch it. Check it out. And this is one of my favorite people in the world. Favorite actors performing and just a cool person. Edie Patterson. Enjoy it. Hi, Edie.
Hi.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure. Please. Love it. Big fan of your work.
Thanks, dude.
I wanted to have you here. This is usually how we start with an intro, especially if I don't know the person, because mm-hmm. normally on my podcast, I know everybody who I interview because I don't like made people. I don't want to interview people who I don't know.
Yeah.
I think, I just saw you. Well, no, I was a fan of your work. I saw you on Vice Principals, and mm-hmm. I was like, this is amazing work. It's such, detailed character work as far as taking someone, not just being hilarious and funny, but making this real character of this desperate woman who is desperate for male attention to the mm-hmm. point of where she's taking someone who yourself are an attractive lady. Hope you don't mind me saying.
I don't mind.
and then making it through the desperation, someone who you would never even want to be with. And to me, that's such good acting. And I was like, who is this person? And then I just seen just pop up on so many things. And then everybody loves the Righteous Gemstones, including my girlfriend and I. And it's rare for us to find a show that we watch together. So we appreciate you. And then I saw you on Instagram. And then I just was like, she seems like a very nice person. And then you follow me and you start liking my stuff. And I'm like, cool, now we're friends. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've been. And so then in return, the question is, why are you here? Why did you say yes?
Because I had the same thing via Instagram. I had listened to your podcast some. And then when I noticed you would like some of my stuff, I really felt like, that's that dude who I'm friends with through his podcast. Now he likes my stuff online. And then maybe Rachel Rush reposted something of yours or something. And then I realized maybe he has my same agent. I don't even know if you're with her or mm-hmm. not. Yeah. Yeah. I just liked you virtually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That makes me real happy. Mm-hmm. Let's get to know each other a little
Let's
bit.
Let's do it. Let's get into it.
I know you're from, because I don't like to do all recap, and I know you got to do that a lot when you're doing interviews, but you're from a place called Texas City, which is not a real place.
I know. It sounds like a TV place.
Yeah. It seems like a cartoon that probably where Speedy Gonzalez lived.
Why Speedy Gonzalez?
Well, because I feel like he was an American cartoon, but he would live close to the border, but they wouldn't have put him in Mexico because they would have felt that was bad for their optics. If you really want to know
why. So let's put
him
in Texas City.
Yeah.
I like it.
That's why I put him there.
Oh, man. I would have really liked for Speedy Gonzalez to be where I was from. I was very into Speedy Gonzalez reruns. Were you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I really liked fast things, like fast and strong cartoons. I was also very into Popeye reruns.
Oh, I love Popeye.
Yeah. And to the point that I tried spinach at one point as a very little kid, 3 or 4. And I really thought it'd make my muscles bulge out and then I discovered it was really gross because it was like canned spinach like he eats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oof.
All the nutrients are gone by then. Yeah. That's same thing like me with Hulk Hogan. He's like, take your vitamins, take your prayers. Yeah. He was leaving out all the steroids.
Right.
He didn't tell me that.
Right. He left that out.
Like, if you told me, I would have taken the steroids.
Yeah, just lay it out, Hulk.
Yeah. Just telling the truth. I'm trying to get there. But what started your love of comedy? How'd you get into improvising and where you are? Let's take it back a few steps.
Yeah, let's take
it back. What started your love of it?
I always liked funny stuff from when I was really little, but I was super shy. And so kind of only liked being funny with my family and their friends. And my dad, it kind of has a weird, absurd, kind of dark sense of humor. And my mom has also an absurd sense of humor, but it's very like elementary school teacher humor to the point that it like falls off the cliff into absurdity. Like anytime we tell my mom to tell a joke, here's a quick side note. What is this joke? It starts with something and she's like, knock, knock. And you say, who's there? She'll say spatula. And then you're like, spatula who? And she goes, spatula. Ha, 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 ha. Like, that's the joke. And you're so mad because you're like, that's so dumb. But you're dying laughing. You're like, damn it. Jeannie got me again. But they both have weird senses of humor. And so I always liked making them laugh. And I liked doing like my first grade teacher, weirdly, in Texas City was an English Christian scientist, this older woman, Mrs. Stelly. And I would come home and do Mrs. Stelly's accent for them. And I just noticed really young, they thought that was so funny. And so I just always liked that stuff. I loved Carol Burnett reruns. I was obsessed with Pee Wee Herman and kind of knew that he was something different, but I didn't know until way later, maybe until I started even doing stuff with the Groundlings, that I go like, oh, wow, I get what he was doing. It's so specific, but it's so blown out at the same time. He made this cartoon a real guy. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what I was responding to as a tiny kid. But yeah, I always liked that mix of like super specific character stuff. And I liked pretending to be people that I saw and coming home and doing their voice and staring at people and then trying to do them. And yeah.
So you were able to mimic people at an early age.
Yeah. Or I liked making up a character off of the way someone looked or, you know. And then forcing my parents to answer me. And I'd be, you know, I'd pretend I was some bad kid or something.
And they were already supportive of that.
Yeah, they were always into it. Thank God.
That's
It's usually, I would say that's not typically how you hear it would go down. Like in Texas with a plumber dad and an elementary school teacher mom. Like, yeah, but they were always... they were always kind of had the mindset of, yeah, go for it. We don't have any money to help you, like, do it. But go for it. Make it happen. Out. Yeah. Yeah, which I think all you need is, like, somebody believing in you.
Truly. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so. What we all have at a young age, everybody feels like that's the fun part about being young is that you feel like you can do anything.
Totally.
That was something that my mom instilled in my sister and I very early and always checked me. She tells this story all the time because my sister is a doctor. She tells a story about when I was like 8 and my sister was 6. We went out to dinner together and I was like, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do when you grow up? And then my sister was like, I want to be a doctor. And I go, girls have to be nurses. You can't be a doctor. And then my mom goes, no, you could be whatever you want to be. You say whatever you want to be. You can be. What do you want to be? And my sister just goes, a cow.
Yes. Did you know what you wanted to be that little?
I did. Yeah. It was kind of like just a roundabout way of getting to it. If you asked me when I was 5 or 6, I would have told you directly when I was brave. I'm like, yes, I want to be a comedian. I'm going to be the best comedian ever. Uh-huh. And then it took a, you know, become a teenager and things and being like, I don't think this is a real job. And how do you just do this? Mm-hmm. You know, people are chosen, I assume.
Totally. And it's so confusing, especially if you're from a family that has no connection to any of it. I think it takes a while for your brain to go, oh, that could be my job. Because even if you want to do it and you feel like you're supposed to do it, yeah, you don't understand how it happens even.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird. There's this weird like cognitive dissonance for a long time until you finally do have like some experience on stage or something where you go like, oh, right. Yeah, I still don't know exactly how you do this, but I know I'm going to.
Yeah, until you find something where you fall into it. For me, yeah, I was working at a bank call center and they had me to come up with like a funny video on how to deal with stress because everybody was calling in and yelling at you about their accounts being overdrawn.
Yeah.
And so for 2 weeks, they let me not make phone calls and just make this funny video.
Awesome.
And then they played it for my team and my team liked it. And then they decided that they were going to play it at the company-wide assembly. Mm-hmm. And then seeing everyone laugh at these jokes gave me such a rush. And then it clicked in my head of going like, oh, I'm making jokes about banking. Mm-hmm. What if I make jokes about things I cared about?
Ugh, that's awesome, dude.
And then they were like, time to get back on the phones. And I was like, I don't think I'm going to be working here much longer.
I'm changed.
Yeah. I just stopped going to work. Yeah. Started going to open mics.
Yeah. It's that moment is revelatory, I think. Like in probably 7th grade, we had this weird talent show where me and some other girls wrote this dating game parody, and we like each played guys in it, and I was the nerd and one was the jock. But yeah, we all wrote our own lines, and like to be on a stage and say the lines that I wrote and hear them laugh, like something clicked in my brain. And I went, oh, right. This is a thing. Yeah.
It feels good.
Oh, man. Yeah. It just feels like the truth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember just the power of it. It was years later. It was after I'd already working here. I moved to L.A. and I got my first writing job on a Kroll show. Mm-hmm. And I just remember writing this sketch about the lawyer sketch. And I was just like, bunch of lawyers carrying briefcases. I just, you know, throw away just writing. And then I show up on set and I see the lawyers and I see the briefcases. Yeah. And I go, that just came from my head.
Seriously.
And that was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
But then I also was like, I like credit. So I want to be on screen.
Yeah. And man, that when it's both is the craziest brain explosion. Because I write for Righteous Gemstones as well. And like, yeah, for something I like thought of in a fever dream of like, oh, I'll say this. And then all the eyes rolled back in my head in a dark hotel room or whatever. Like, and then this will happen. And then this will happen. And then, yeah, there's 100 crew guys with cameras and you're in some weird location. You're like, oh my God, this is real? Like this came out of this weird dream part of my brain. Like, and now we're here doing it. But yeah, I like doing it too. I like the credit too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like both.
I like when people are not afraid to admit it. Although some people just don't like being on screen.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I love both. Mm-hmm. I like.
Me too.
But I leaned into acting after, because I had a writing job and I was also acting on a kid's show at the same time. They were both like my first writing, my first acting job.
Oh, wow.
And I was like trying to figure out, well, what do I want to focus on? Yeah. What I was going to be. And then in the kid show, they brought out this beautiful floral cake from one of the kid actresses. And I was like, that's the most beautiful cake I've ever seen. I go, I want a cake like that. And then one of the writers on that show turns around and was like, well, you could get one. You're an actor. They'll give you one. And I was like, acting.
That's when it like edged out writing with the cake.
Yeah, it just, I mean, I like, I'm not good at writing in groups that much. I'm not good at writing for other people. My voice is very specific. Mm-hmm. So, like, even when I was writing on Kroll shows, the things that I worked the best for me were when I was just writing a sketch for myself.
Yep.
When I had to go write in his voice, my brain kind of glazes over.
Yeah, it's weirder.
It is weird. How do you do it? How do you do for both?
You know, I would say like my first super duper experience with writing was writing stuff for myself at Groundlings. But sometimes you write a sketch with someone. And so that was probably my first foray into, you want to make the whole thing funny. You know, mm-hmm. how boring would it be if you write a sketch with someone and you're like making sure you say all the funny stuff.
Like, some people would like that.
I know. But it's like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of high tide raises all boats. So mm-hmm. That's where I started learning like, oh, if I can write something super funny for them, it just helps us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess if I can tap into the part of my brain that likes pretending to be someone else, then I write better as them. If I can sort of like almost see their face on my face mm-hmm. as I'm writing for them.
Yeah, because then you're writing from a place of truth. If you're not making something up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is hard though, because sometimes your brain just wants to write like the thing that you think is funny. And then you have to second guess it and go, but is this what they would say? You know? Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
That's fun. I know. I'm just thinking right now, going, oh, my girlfriend's going to love this part of the interview.
Oh, yeah.
She's a writer.
Cool.
She loves that type of stuff. So I just started commenting on it. Like, ooh, she going to like this later.
She won't be creeped out at all that I said, wear someone else's face.
So let's talk about how you made the leap from being interested in comedy and improvising into coming to LA and doing things like that. What made you make that jump? How did you get into it?
I would say the big sort of bridge and game changer for me. I mean, I knew I wanted to be an actor, but I would say the biggest sort of morphing catalyst for me was starting to improvise and starting to do live shows. And I feel like improv absolutely changed my life, made my mindset better, helped me with, you know, just basic shyness and bravery and trusting the moment and knowing like whatever's happening right now is what's supposed to be happening. And
so you took so many life lessons.
Huge life lessons. I think improv in general is a life philosophy if you let it be.
Yeah. I feel the same about acting.
Yeah.
And stand up.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say that was the big sort of in between, was starting to improvise and then starting to improvise a lot. Multiple shows a week and just putting in hours and doing it over and over and over until, you know, when I first started, I feel like I had some amount of natural aptitude for it, but I was like crazy, like in my body, like the energy of it was like almost uncontrollable in me. And I was like kind of spazzy and like, I still think I did a good job, but I was like, almost out of body. Yeah. All angles and like, like an animal. And I think, just doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it, you realize like, oh, right, I don't need to try. I need to allow rather than try.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's beautiful.
To me, that's everything.
It is everything. And to me, that's one of my favorite, what I feel a lot about knowledge in general and trust. And you're going to have to go with me on this, but I feel like you will.
Let's do it. Oh, I get down with all the stuff.
I feel like you do. I'm excited. To me, like I always found like most of my knowledge is like, it's just inner knowledge that I already have that I'm uncovering through experience. It's like, you know, you're like sharpening your sword or sharpening away the rust of the thing. It's like, it's not like you're learning new things, which you are learning new things, but what you really are is uncovering your true self. Mm-hmm. And that power and being out of control comes from not being used to your true self.
Yeah.
And so that's what I feel a lot of times when like lot of my acting gigs where I know when I'm doing well, when I feel that control, when I'm improvising a little bit, I'm having fun, but I don't leave. Don't leave my body. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, a lot of times I'm like out of control. And it's felt the same way with stand up, where it came from when I was first 6-7 years of stand up, it was like we were doing a roller coaster, but I was hopping in the roller coaster with them. And now I'm like, I just run the machine.
That's awesome.
You know?
And yeah.
It's just, I think again, yeah, just uncovering who you truly are and then being, learning to be comfortable and confident with that and not trying, not, that's what we do in my acting classes. Whenever I'm fucking up, it's usually she just goes, "You're acting." And I'm like, yeah, yes, I am acting.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you right now. I'm not telling you, I'm not being truthful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's so astute, what you just said, and so profound of all. I think all we have, any of us, is that I'm me and you're you and you're specifically you. And there's some Neil Gaiman quote. Do you know that quote about like that's all we've got? And I'm going to bastardize it, but it's basically like that's your superpower and you're wasting your time if you're trying to be anything other than that. Mm-hmm. And I so, so strongly believe that. And it took me a long time to like feel the truth of that and go, oh, right. Dig down into that.
Yeah.
Don't reach out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what we're taught to do. A lot of times we're just taught to conform to the people around us and be like them because they would prefer us not to find our true powers because then there's a happiness and you don't necessarily have to purchase that happiness.
I knew
you'd be with me.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Because, I mean, think about like, I don't know, if I think about performers that have super lit me up, that I always, it's a thing for me of like, what are they doing? And it's just, they're so doing their thing. If you think about like Nicholson or Richard Pryor or even like Juliette Lewis or like the people that you're like, what's going on? That's my favorite. Is when they're just in their truth.
Yeah.
And it's exciting and it's raw and weird. And yeah.
That's what I love about most good performer, but most good art is just like, you set me up into this world and you invite me into your world. It's already formed. It's already been there. You're there whether I come by or not. But I just happen to come by and I want to get a view in your world. You know, that's what I love with any art. And I think that's what people really are responding to, like with the Righteous Gemstones, is that it's such a specific.
I hope so. Yeah.
I will tell you because I know you're not allowed to say it because you're making it. But I will tell you, I think that is what people are responding to and is what I love in art. And it really inspires me and helps me because a lot of times I just write personal and I write things that about the people who I've seen in my life. And then sometimes I get a lot of feedback like, oh, it's too dark or people don't want to see this. Or why don't you write something sillier because people like how silly you are. But then I see these little things like, no, if I just get better, if I just keep getting better at it, this does work. And this is the art I like watching. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That thing you were saying a minute ago is so interesting too, about the like just uncovering and like wiping off the rust. And because that all plays into two, like, I don't know, that time's not linear and like you already know all the stuff you know. And just like, yeah, just keep wiping that stuff off and finding what's true because it's already there.
Absolutely.
I'm down with all that.
Good. Where does that come from with you? Because I assume Texas City doesn't seem like it would be open to a lot of fun, weird spirituality, metaphysical type things that you seem like you are too from your necklace.
Shout out to Cassidy Freeman, who's on my show, who gave me this necklace. Yeah, you know, my dad was always into like supernatural stuff via movies mostly. And I think that a huge part of like my open-mindedness about that stuff weirdly comes from like 80s and 90s movies that like stuck in my craw as a kid. And I don't know if you ever had this thing where you would watch a movie and go, oh, I understand this more than I do my actual life. Mm-hmm. Or that's how I want to be. And that's not in my normal life, but that's how I want to be. Yeah, I don't know if you ever felt that thing, but.
Well, for me, it was watching I Love Lucy mm-hmm. all the time. I grew up in Southside Chicago and it's kind of dangerous and mm-hmm. and people shooting and stuff. And mm-hmm. then I watch I Love Lucy and I see this little 1950s life and they're having fun like that. And I go like, that's what I like.
Yeah.
That's what yeah. I'm interested in.
That's awesome. Yeah, because that's your soul. Your soul recognized its friends. You know? But yeah, probably I'm into that stuff kind of through my dad, because he always seemed open to sort of the supernatural in real life. And Texas City is an odd place in that it's full of refineries. And so there's kind of constantly this like a sound all the time, especially in the dead of night. Like I'd be laying in my bedroom and would hear like the chemicals burning off from far away. And it's the kind of place where when you drive in the dark, it's one of those landscapes that looks like Star Wars from far away because there's so many lit up machines. And so I don't know. I think I was in a place where you would think, if you were wired this way, you would think a lot about what's beyond here.
Mm-hmm.
What are things felt weirdly possible. And sometimes strange there in an interesting way. Yeah.
I like that. Sometimes so many people look at growing up in places like that or small towns in general as like this detriment of like, oh, I'm not in LA. I'm not in New York. I'm not in Boston. Mm-hmm. I'm not in this major town. So I can't do anything. But I think sometimes there's something to the boredom that can yep. be created, to the like, thinking of what else is there past
totally.
This that is that if you have an open mind, if you're naturally leans that way, that it can be very helpful for
totally.
You.
Totally. Especially if you are having that, you know, that boredom and that wondering and that curiosity and feeling from a very young age that you're different than that, or just like, yeah, maybe slightly out of place for whatever reason, even if you can't articulate it yet. Yeah, that combo I think can be real helpful, a real helpful engine for creativity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to feel like you got to keep moving either way. That's how mm-hmm. I always felt. I was like, mm-hmm. these aren't I have not met my people yet. Mm-hmm. And my first try started stand up and I was like, maybe this is it. And mm-hmm. I was like, wait, no, it's not everybody here either.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it just became like, oh, I think I just like kind people
yeah.
who are open minded and who are is like my life is kind of like vaudeville in that way where I just hang out with a lot of different we all have different jobs. Some of us mm-hmm. are comedians, actors. One of my best friends, a pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. It's just like a bunch of weirdos. But yeah. I think that's what I draw towards me because yeah. that's what I am.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Two of my best friends are, one's a novelist and one's an artist, a sculptor. And yeah, they've been two of my best friends forever. And I like having that different stuff in my life. And yeah, it comes down to, they're rad, sweet people, yeah, who happen to be creative in their own way, highly creative. When I say in their own way, I just mean they're not actors. They're both off the charts creative. But yeah, I think that's what I seek out too, is I seek out sweet and I like funny people too,
yeah.
as I'm sure you do.
I do.
Yeah.
But it was a change in before I was like, oh, if anyone's a comedian like me, then we're meant to be friends.
Right.
Both the thing. And it was a shock to the system. But like, no, there's mean comedians. Mm-hmm. There's mean everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got to find the people who are trying to be a positive.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes people think that because, you know, because other people were like, oh, that's weird and that's sappy. And what do you do? But like, it's a real good thing to do and a good thing to be. And obviously, as we look around, a needed thing.
Yep.
And so that's the people who, that's like my girlfriend's so sweet, Halston, he's a sweetheart. Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like I try to have talented people around me, but I much rather take a chance on someone who's learning and nice than someone who's super talented and a jerk.
Absolutely, dude. That's, man. And luckily, like on this show, that seems to be like an underlying rule.
I know it is one that only, and I'm sorry for jumping in. I interrupted, please. But it was please. One of the first time I looked at a show and I went like, and I've never met Danny before, mm-hmm. and I never met you, but we were friends online. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I know all these people and they're all sweet. I know Adam mm-hmm. for years. I know Tony for years. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I am happy for everyone.
Yeah,
and
they're sweet.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, me too. It's it's sort of mind blowing and so lucky. Cause yeah, you don't always get it.
No.
There's always seems to be always somebody like making it a tiny bit weird.
Yeah.
And it's not the case on this one. Oh, thank God. Yeah, it's the best. I bet you get down with you get down with improvisers a lot too.
I do, which yeah. is fun because I've never taken any classes, mm-hmm. not trained at all. I love it. Like, but usually the best times I have in my life are like doing improvised shows with like Paul F. Tompkins uh-huh. and things like that. I love Paul. He always makes me feel the funniest mm-hmm. when I'm around him. But I do love it. I just never got into it. I used to have a bias against it because it seemed like it took money and I did not have mm-hmm. any. Mm-hmm. And it also seems extremely Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this. I remember one time I tried to go to a thing and I did the first zip, zap, zop thing. And I was like, this isn't feel right for me.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of like beginning stuff could turn anybody off because you sort of go like, what the hell is this? Yeah.
But I love it. Yeah, I just did a movie with Eugene Cordero uh-huh. and Betsy Sidero and mm-hmm. Mary Holland. And yeah, I love working with improvisers.
Yeah. I feel like you have an improviser spirit and vibe.
I just like making jokes. Yeah. And I love making things better. And I love pitching jokes to, mm-hmm. that aren't necessarily for me, but mm-hmm. for just changing things and having fun. That's, and I didn't even, because my first job on the show, I was on the Dateable, it was so open to that. Uh-huh. And they would be sometimes so behind on writing that you would get these scripts that just say, Ron, make up a joke.
I would literally have it written in. Yeah. That's awesome.
And I would love it. And I got used to it. And then I went to another show and I remember going to improvise a couple times and then they just like stopped and they were like, we need you to like, and then I go, yeah, but this is, but look at the script. Look how it's written. I go, if I flip this, this is funnier mm-hmm. and it makes a little bit more sense. And they mm-hmm. go, yeah, but we got to call down to a thing. Oh, and I was like, man. Oh no,
oh, man.
Why did you hire me?
Right. Yeah. That's the thing is it's like, you have a superpower, use it or don't, like to hire you and then to kneecap you with saying like, yeah, but the fact that you can fly, don't use it here. It's like, oh man.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
You run into that a lot before?
Not a ton. It seems like when I've done stuff that's like multi-camera, it's way more set.
Yes.
And the air almost feels pressure-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of like yeah, it's like not freedom. It's more prowess than it is freedom. And I very much prefer like a freedom vibe. Let's try some stuff. Let's see what happens. Yeah. And then I think genius things can happen and transcendent things can happen. But it almost has to be open for, experiments and failures.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I love those. I think it's rare because it takes a certain level of comedic intelligence to be able to write yourself in and out of it and just know, like, hey, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. We'll problem solve it. That's why, like, I did a couple of sketches with Dan Harmon, and it was like we'd show up and there was like nothing yet. And I was like, And I was like, yes, great. This is great. Let's great. Just talk it out.
Yeah.
Let's talk it out together. And we discussed it and we felt I was playing Idi Amin and we were just Googling him and looking up.
Yes.
And I was like, well, what would this? And then what if he just has daddy issues and that's the whole thing. And then we just did that and
awesome.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then the other half of it, like I did another show. And I would call my girlfriend at the end of every day and I'd just be like, I don't know if I'm funny. Like,
man, that's the worst. That feeling is the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you feel, to me, that feeling, creeps in. Oh man, I've asked myself that so many times. I've gotten on the phone with my husband, Dan, and been like, I think it was fine. It's that same, it's the different way of saying, I don't know if I'm funny. It's like, I think. Question
they're
mark?
Telling me I am.
Yeah, everyone seems to think it's good, but
I'm not.
Man,
laughing.
Oh man, I don't have the feeling yeah. that I use the joy I usually have when something actually is good. Yeah, that's the weirdest, and I think that always just comes from like if there's a fear in the room of either for time or perfection or it has to be these lines or like. Somebody in the mix is worried.
Yeah.
And it's like,
a lot of time. I mean, for this one that I was on, it would seem just to be like, oh, we got it. And for a lot of them, it was like this is their show going into retirement. You know, they're like, we've been on a couple of shows already. Mm-hmm. We don't need to improvise. Let's get home by 4.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, I loved getting home early.
Sure.
But I was like, can we play on one of these?
Right.
Can we try something new?
Yeah, could we be open to this being hilarious?
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
No,
yeah.
But that's my favorite. It's like, I'm not necessarily great at seeing a full blank page and just going like, I got something. But mm-hmm. like, you give me a base mm-hmm. and I go, okay, well, this is how I see it.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite.
Yeah.
It's collaboration.
Totally. And just being, my favorite's when everyone just knows their character well enough that something could go off the rails for a minute and everyone just knows how they would react because they're just being truthful. And no one's trying to do jokes. Everyone's just saying what their character really would say, which is always weirdly funny because
yeah.
it's just true.
Yes. That's what I was talking about with Kevin Nealon, I guess a week ago. Certainly not a few minutes ago, but that's a big thing. I think as you get more experience comedically is that you stop looking for the jokes. You stop looking for like, how can I make this certain type of joke or what's the twist here? And you just start going for the truths because the truths are where it really lives. That's where the jokes that don't fade away live.
Totally. And I think that's the same with improv. All my studying of improv, the roots are in Keith Johnstone, who's one of the sort of, you know, old school gurus of, you know, around the same time as like Del Close, Keith Johnstone, whoever.
I did research on you.
But that was part of his thing is... That's when a live audience really reacts and you get that weird, like everyone moves forward and like a sound comes out of everyone almost uncontrollably mm-hmm. is when something is just true. And if you just say the next thing, if you just say the true thing mm-hmm. in the moment, that's what causes the biggest laughs yeah. in the audience.
Yeah, it's been my thing that society, we're taught to run away from that so often. We're mm-hmm. taught to mask truth, that when someone hits you with their direct truth, uh-huh. it breaks you.
Totally.
And forces you to laugh.
Yeah, totally. Because we want it.
Mm-hmm.
Like something deep down in us, in our like primal core of our soul is like, say the thing. Just like almost like we're, you know, it's very like, primate style, like say the thing. Say the thing that's in my head.
Absolutely. Oh, where are we at time wise, Halsey? I feel like we're running long. I don't wanna. Oh, perfect.
Oh, great.
So I like, we always ask what, because you're doing the middle great things right now, but what are some goals that you have whether personally or for your career, that something that you're focusing on. What are your goals? Tell us.
Let's see. Well, just like on the super like career level, I want to be able to keep making this show more. I think it's a giant world and a giant story that is sort of infinitely fun. And I think personally what I'm working on is reminding myself that my true nature, and I think all artists' true natures are fearlessness. And I want to remind myself of that over and over.
You're trying to dig deeper, unlock yourself even more.
Yeah, totally. There's I do this improvised one person show, and that's wowie. That's when I have to really, really remind myself to be brave and to be fearless, and because it's you just improvise a show by yourself and you play all the characters, and I still have like old school nerves before it. I usually don't get nervous before live stuff anymore. I get kind of stoked. But this one like almost makes me sick every time I do it. And yeah, I have to remember giant big picture things like we're all going to die someday. All you have is tonight. Like, you know, all that kind of stuff. But that's a big one that I reminds me to be fearless. And yeah, if all we've got is this moment and in this life, I'm getting to do what I want to do in this life. Fuck it. Be fearless. Yeah. Like, go toward it.
Yeah, why waste the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're here. You're putting in the work. Mm-hmm. You sacrificed what you already sacrificed.
Yeah.
Why would you shut it down now? Mm-hmm. Why would you be? That's the big thing I see, though, sometimes in careers. Once you get a little bit of success, then the money comes involved. And I see it a lot in stand-up. Because I love shit talking. Mm-hmm. And then I would get like the same shit talking I was doing a couple years ago. And I do it to my friends, but they're on shows now. And then they don't want to do it anymore.
Oh,
and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
I thought we were supposed to have fun.
Right.
And just make fun of stuff. That's the job.
Oh, what do you think that is, though?
I think it's money.
Yeah.
I think when you get some money in it, then it kind of freezes you up to go, then you're like, oh, I better act professionally or maybe they won't give me any more money.
Right.
What I've been leaning into is the Kanye thing. Is it more scrutiny? What I do, act more stupidly.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, you have to go into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's what got you there in the first
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely.
So that's what I've been doing. I've been getting weirder. I've been doing more great. Jokes about koalas.
Great. I love it. That's your version of fearlessness.
Yeah.
More jokes about koalas. Yes.
At the comedy store at 11:30 p.m. after I'm following a guy talking about having sex at 12 years old. Yeah. It makes me feel fearless. Yeah.
That's awesome.
You knew exactly who I was talking about. It was. He was telling the joke. He was like, remember when you 12 years old and all you could do was finger a girl? And I just go up there and I go, that's not my 12. I don't remember that at all. I remember trying to race home to make it home before Pokemon was over.
Yeah. That's not my 12 either.
I remember Ghost Rider.
I remember drawing portraits of John Bon Jovi.
Yeah, that's a 12 I can relate to. Not this Joey Diaz locking people in trunks of his car. Go see Joey D. I hope we get Joey on the podcast. He'd be great.
Were you such a like a good boy.
Yeah.
I was such a good girl.
Yeah. A little nerd. Mm-hmm. And my mom's single mom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was like trying to look out for my sister and stuff. They called us Hansel and Gretel. Awesome. That was our thing at school.
Awesome.
I was a big, yeah, just a big nerd. Big nerd most of my life till 16. Then also a nerd, but just also pothead nerd.
Yeah, got it.
So, still the same.
Yep, it is still the same.
And now you just throw in dad. And it's still the same.
Yep. Yeah, I was a nerd all the way through. And then I was like a cool nerd, had a ton of friends, and was like, you know, popular in quotes, but I was always a nerd.
Yeah.
And I'm still a nerd. And I think nerds are really fun to hang out with, and you can go deep real quick with a nerd. And I love that.
Yeah. And what is a nerd but someone who is passionate about something?
Yep. And not afraid, not having that cool.
Yeah.
Cool is so lame.
Yeah. Cool is so lame because cool is apathetic. Cool is just following a trend of whatever everybody else likes.
Yep.
And usually it's super lame.
Yep.
Like, that's not cool at all. So lame. But people don't get that half the time. So, that's the greatest lesson of this episode so far. Just be a nerd.
Be
yourself. And most of all, I would like to say, don't become one of those bitter nerds. That's what I don't like.
I don't like that either.
A lot of bitter, and I will lean it for me, a lot of bitter male nerds who then like become the very thing that they hated. They pick it on people. They're mean. Mm-hmm. They're sexist. And it's just like, you know how this felt because people made you feel bad. Yep. So why would you turn around and become a bitter nerd?
Totally. Yeah, I'm not interested in a bitter nerd who's like mad at women because no one will have sex with him because he's bitter. Because, you know, the snake that eats its own tail.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's sweet nerd. Yeah. A fun nerd.
They never get it. They're always like, oh, girl won't sleep with me because I'm not, don't got ass, not handsome. It's like, no, you're bitter and mean.
No, you're mean. You're a bully.
No one wants to be around you.
Yeah.
Just be a nice, sweet person that makes everyone want to be happy. Trust me, people will have sex with you.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, you're a bitter nerd who probably has no confidence, which equals no game. And you could be the biggest nerd, but if you're confident enough to go say hi to someone and ask them about themselves, you'll do all right, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. And I love what you said. You didn't say just go up and talk to them. Ask them about themselves.
Yeah.
Show some interest.
Yeah.
Don't just, because you go over there and you just like, basically a lot of times you just like, hey, I want some sex.
It's like, yeah,
that's easy to turn down.
Yeah, nobody wants to say yes to that. Yeah. Oh, really? You want some? Great. Let's leave this place we're in.
Yeah. Well, it makes me feel special. Like it came straight for me. Oh, you fun time. What's the writing process like on, can I ask you that?
Yeah.
What, because I imagine it's a little different. So much improvising and stuff. What's it like?
It's, you know, we always get the stuff to you as written because the scripts are really good. And then it just sort of gets decided later if any of the stuff we improvised gets used or not. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But we all kind of would come together, and then different people would write different episodes per week. Mm. So each week we would have a new version of every episode just to get interest down the road a little bit.
Absolutely.
And even if, you know, the version of episode 4 had nothing that carried over into the next week, it's like a stab at maybe some of this stuff or maybe some of this stuff. And
these scenes can be moved around, might end up in a different episode.
Yeah, totally. And you just keep on inching forward until, you know, 1 is done, then 2 is done, then 3 is done, then 4 is done. But yeah, kind of everybody's taking stabs the whole time separately and then all coming together to discuss stuff.
Like a little melting pot.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, get a lot of different viewpoints that way.
For sure.
That's smart.
Yeah, there were a lot of people in the room too that had interesting religious backgrounds. Like one of the dudes that was in the room for a big chunk of time, Jared Hess, like used to be a Mormon and one of the guys had a dad who was the music guy for, not Jimmy Swaggart, but one of those dudes, one of those main dudes. So he grew up in a mega church. And it was kind of interesting to hear different people's takes on growing up within that. And we all kind of did in some way, different ways, but.
What I find interesting about this show that I think is relatable is like, you don't necessarily have to have gone to a mega church to really kind of see the overarching themes of this, which is a lot of like hypocrisy mm-hmm. of how people tell you to live their life in mm-hmm. regard to how they live their life.
Sure.
And a lot of people just taking advantage of people with hope and people with needs and telling them like, we can provide your salvation with your tithings and your money. And I think that's a great message mm-hmm. to get out there. And when it seemed like it would be difficult to have like networks get behind, but it seems like you guys are not even really like subtle. It's right.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there. Yeah. I think hopefully the thing that makes the show fun is that it's, the show is not about that as much as it's about, oh, here's this flawed family who happens to be in this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wonder if it would get super boring super fast if the focus was, all about the church and all about hypocrisy. It's like these colorful people against the backdrop of it, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that is my, because I've seen other shows where they're not necessarily dealing with that, but just sometimes some network shows will drive directly into religion because they're like, this is a quick way to get market to mm-hmm. a group of people who are loyal viewers. Sure. But they never seem to work out mm-hmm. because they're not really actual funny or good stories.
Right.
They're just trying to be like, here's religion.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, well, I mean, really, who are we to say that anything anyone believes is right or wrong? That I don't think that's really our job or our intent. It's just, hey, look at these people. They happen to be in this world, which hopefully you'll find funny and interesting.
Well, I do. Yeah. From one episode, Halston's watched two. He's still in. The time to land, Halston? Okay, let's land a plane.
Okay, let's land it.
How we normally land is by asking for a piece of advice for a thing maybe you've been thinking on, focusing on, struggling with. Just something that you can share with our getting better community to help us get better. I know it's vague. Everyone nails it.
Great. Let's see. I think everyone goes through chunks of time where you feel like lost or what am I doing or how do I do this, or you know, whether it's you're trying to become an actor, you're trying to become a stand-up, or you're trying to whatever you're trying to do, you're trying to get a relationship, or you're trying to, and I think right now today is that if you can just keep going toward the love and what makes you feel joyful, whether that's performing live every week or going for hikes or whatever it is, just keep doing that stuff and know that the frequency of joy you feel is where it's at. Mm. Things will work out if you just keep going toward that feeling of lightness.
It's like a happiness metal detector that you got
totally.
Going.
Totally.
It should let you know if you're on your path or not, if you're finding that joy, if you're feeling that
joy. Yeah, yeah.
I love that. That's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. Cool. I love it because I love the opposite of that because I see so many people. I ran into some friends I know from a long time mm-hmm. still doing stand-up and you know I'm doing okay and, mm-hmm. and then they're not doing as well, and you kind of see like a bitterness mm-hmm. in it, and some of it they've even like gone through divorces or having trouble with, you know, with the relationship with their kids, and part of me just wants to be like, look, it doesn't seem like you're getting joy from this. Mm-hmm. Get out.
Yeah.
If you're not,
totally.
If it's not making you happy every step of the way, mm-hmm. not just when you get money, not yeah. just when you get on a TV show, because there's always a next day. There's always another opportunity. There's always a no. There's always another mountain to climb.
Yes.
So if you're not joyful about it every day, about that just get for me getting on stage holding that microphone, for mm-hmm. you being up there, your one woman show by yourself, mm-hmm. or writing or whatever it would be. If you don't feel that joy from that actual activity, from the work of it, yeah. then you're probably not in the right field for you.
Totally. I couldn't agree more with that.
Yay!
Yeah, those moments should be like little weightless escapes where you go off into space and you're like, oh yeah, this is the real me. This is my real consciousness. And like, yeah, where you forget all the troubles.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, you might want to move along. And we know, you know, it's not like sometimes I'm going to the comedy store at night and I'm like, oh, I don't want to go sit in traffic. I don't mm-hmm. want to do this. Or I'm worried how my set goes. But like when I'm the moment I'm actually on that stage and they call in my name, it's like that's where I feel at home. That's where I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why I know, like you said, if they didn't pay me a dime, I yep. would still go. Usually they don't because I forget to get my checks for months at a time. And then I go in 6 months and I get a bunch of checks and I buy weed with it.
A big stack.
It's great. Yeah. A lot of times my bank won't take them because they're too old.
And you have to get a reissue?
Yeah. Or I just go home and I deposit electronically because they don't, my phone don't care.
That's awesome.
You're awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. And I want to say, I'm glad that we're internet friends. I'm glad that you came here because just being around you, I only know you a little bit, but oh, I love your spirit. I love just talking to you makes me feel good.
Thanks, you dude.
Seem intelligent and really funny. And I love the work that you're doing. I love it before I met you and I love it more now. And so I just think that, we're lucky and I'm happy to have people like you who are out there doing nerdy, intelligent, fun work. And I want to make sure I tell you that I appreciate it.
Thanks. I appreciate you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. Thanks for coming.
Thanks.
Bye.